Hello and welcome to our webinar featuring MedCurity and iAtrix Systems. I'm Corey Mullins and I'm going to be your moderator for today's discussion. Our topic today is HIPAA privacy and security, exploring internal and external threats. We have two amazing speakers lined up to discuss HIPAA privacy and security with you today. We have Joe Galatly, the CEO and co-founder of MedCurity, and Demi Borden, team lead customer success of patient privacy for iAtrix Systems. I know for myself, I'm excited for the opportunity to have our speakers share their experience with you today. And with that, I'll pass it over to our speakers. Joe, take it away.
Thank you so much, Corey. It's really exciting to be here and have this opportunity to share what we're seeing here recently. I've been in this world for a little over 10 years in healthcare technology, for a lot longer than that. And every year there's a dramatic amount of change, especially speaking of threats, internal or external threats, when we're looking at privacy and security. So we like to have a forum like this where we can share what we're seeing and any best practices and takeaways around that. So just over 5 years ago, we launched MedCurity, and MedCurity is a software platform that we've focused on bringing clarity and competence to this world for healthcare organizations. So we support the process of conducting the security risk analysis and then managing that risk profile through the year, as well as creating policies and other aspects that we've built in along the way. So that has uniquely positioned us to be on the front lines and be out with customers, with hospitals and clinics around the country, and get to see where the challenges are and where we have opportunities to focus and help support. So that's been great to be a part of that journey. And again, I appreciate this opportunity in front of us to talk.
And hi, everyone. My name is Demi Borden. I'm the team lead of customer success for our privacy customers at iAtrix System. I've been working with these customers for almost 2 years now and have enjoyed every step of the way. So every day, my team works with privacy officers and auditors at healthcare organizations across North America. We help privacy officers in a multitude of ways, including training them on our monitoring software, helping them set up reports to audit employee accesses, and providing support and advice on how to manage and create proactive auditing workflows. For more than 30 years, iAtrix Systems has been helping over 1,300 hospital organizations, both big and small, with everything healthcare IT related. That's from patient privacy monitoring to barcode specimen collection, report writing services, EHR optimizations, and much more. And although we do offer a variety of solutions to make the most of your existing IT investments, protecting PHI is at the core of our company focus, and I'm really excited to share some of our experience with you today.
So I'll lead us out with a picture of what the external risk profile looks like for healthcare organizations. Where are data breaches occurring and what kind of impact are they having? And we watch the trends around this, and unfortunately, and if any of you participate in these type of webinars regularly, you've seen this, it just progressively gets harder, gets worse, and gets more challenging. And the impact of any kind of security events or other types of breaches has gotten progressively worse as well. So we have seen that the healthcare market has been the top target for, as shown here, for 12 years, even surpassing the finance market. And our cost to each entity that walks through a data breach and has something like that occur has been escalating year over year too, depending on the report you look at, anywhere from $9.5 to over $10 million for a incident that occurs as the overall cost. When you look across penalties and look across the mitigation and the cleanup after those kind of events, even into civil action and other types of follow-on effects that happen after these breaches. So one of the things we watch really carefully, I mentioned with MedCurity, we do the security risk analysis. So we look at all aspects of privacy and security compliance. We also want to focus and say, where is the higher risk areas for us? And that has shifted over the past few years. Statistically, the types of breaches that are occurring for hospitals and clinics have shifted from being maybe a third are related to some type of hacking or IT incident to almost 80% of those types of breaches. And these are the over 500 records breached, meaning over 500 patients were impacted. Those have become typically related to some type of attack that's happening, some kind of cyber attack that's happening. And so we've really focused in on that as a partner and as a company to understand where those are coming from and where, how do we reduce that risk for and healthcare entities. We watch the specific events that happen in addition to the trends. So we just, not to really highlight or focus on any one entity for too long, but of course, watching the headlines, we're seeing right about daily right now, about a one a day cadence of data breaches occurring. So we look at those and kind of unpack them. We just called a couple out here as recent examples, and looking at the university that had a pretty large settlement that they paid the Office of Civil Rights after a data breach occurred. And then simultaneously looking at this example in Arizona of a hospital system. In both cases, the Office of Civil Rights followed up this cyber attack with an additional penalty because they found that the security compliance requirements under HIPAA were not being followed. So part of our takeaway as we watch this is there's actually, as much as HIPAA regulatory requirements have been around for many years, even in this rapidly changing landscape, we're still seeing if we can tie back a lot of best practices and things we should be doing to the requirements that are in the security rule. And specifically called out in a couple of these cases, both of these cases, was the lack of a specific security risk analysis being done, and then a number of controls to monitor their network activity and put policies and procedures in place. Also specifically wanted to look at a Florida instance that happened here very recently as well. In this case, just in the last couple of weeks, this entity, they're classified as a business associate, but they actually have two covered entities, meaning provider and type entities under them as subsidiaries. So kind of an interesting layout. And then this was again a security breach, and this occurred, just to unpack this for a moment, it occurred in July, but they had taken and done some investigation and taken a close look at this to figure out what all was compromised, and just let everyone know. And the date of this is March 16th this month, right? The date of this is when they started getting letters out to patients. So in this case, there's already been yesterday a civil action lawsuit filed, and some of this fallout from not necessarily following the security rule requirements to notify patients of a breach, to notify the Office of Civil Rights and all the other entities that are involved in that process. So again, just watching the trends, we have seen the Office of Civil Rights take a stronger stand when there's an entity that didn't follow the immediate reporting requirements that come after a data breach. So I wanted to highlight just those couple examples to get us started on the external side.
All right. And like Joe said, the growth of ransomware and just hacking related breaches over the past 10 years has grown immensely. And the impact to your organization from a cybersecurity perspective is significant. But it's not the only threat that's out there. The reason we have the feeling that it is because the articles we typically see out there on the press, whether that's online or in print, are stories about ransomware. They're about a hospital being shut down, not being able to access their own files. And it usually has a dollar sign with a big number in that headline. It's rare that we see a story about a snooping incident, which is why we may perceive it as not as impactful. We know privacy teams are equally focused on what's going on inside their organization, and that's usually what keeps privacy officers up at night, whether they have someone inside their organization snooping, or worse, in a malicious sense, stealing private information to sell. For example, a few years ago, a Florida hospital was fined over $2 million by the OCR after it was discovered that an employee inappropriately accessed over 24,000 patient records and then sold private information from those records in fraudulent behavior. And this is something that, with the right technology and training, could have been prevented. Now, I know insider threats are out there, and my job isn't to scare you today. In fact, if we look at insider threats over the past 10 years, something that we can see as a trend is although the number of breaches increased and peaked up through COVID, they're now starting to go down. Now, does this mean that there are simply less insider threats? No. In fact, in a recent report from the HHS, the OCR's caseload has increased by 69% since 2017, of which the majority were related to privacy. We can speculate, however, and what we've seen firsthand with our customers is that we're simply getting better at catching these insider threats. Now, that doesn't mean privacy teams are always getting there before it's an actual breach. You can see in the graph that's just not always the case. But what that does mean is with the right technology and the right training, privacy teams are able to identify the insider threats, issues, and individuals that are the problem so that they can then create a privacy plan and training regimen to help close those gaps. Another trend we've been seeing is that technology is getting better. In fact, the most recent IBM report states that organizations who have incorporated AI and automation contain breaches 28 days faster on average and saved over $3 million in costs.
Thanks, Demi. Yeah, that's one of the things that we watch are the second order effects of these types of incidents that occur, and whether it's external, which we'll look more at some of the sources and causes and attack vectors relating to the external threats, or it's internal incidents that happen. Either way, we've seen an impact to the organization's reputation in the community, and whether it's a big news story on a cyber attack, or it's just the community awareness that sometimes staff isn't or looking at requisition be looking at any of those things that build, and we see that in the field frequently. So we see on either side that in advance you can avoid a lot of damage control by figuring out how to minimize these type of events from occurring. Other types of impacts, of course, are financial. There's the downtime impact and the rebuilding that comes out of the cyber attack, the external threat side. Administrative burden for months following the event. These organizations are, and maybe some of you have been through this, it feels like war. You're on the front lines of a war for a while coming out of that. We're also starting to see there's a couple news stories last month on a large nonprofit health system that has just undergone a ransomware attack and some of the patient safety related events that came out of it. So even to the extent where there's news stories about a mother whose child was misdosed during that event, things like that are occurring. So lots of downstream impact that we're keeping in mind as we look at risk and how to avoid these things as well. So part of what statistics showed was we are seeing this continued increase in phishing attacks. And there's a number of vectors or sources of a phishing attack, but primarily email and still is the leading avenue in, and it's getting more and more deceptive. And again, many of us see this almost on a daily basis, how effective and deceptive these types of emails can be. And for our workforce, of course, who are focused on patient care, focused on other things, being taken with an email that if they're not thinking paranoid enough, is becoming easier for the bad actors that are launching those kind of attacks. So as much as that's been the focus for a couple of years, it needs to continue to be. With one of the recent surveys that came up, we're still maybe 1 in 5 healthcare entities are running the type of simulations that will tell them whether, you know, help them train their staff and see the paranoia level of your staff, if you will. So running a simulated phishing attack and then seeing who clicks on that, also taking those individuals who might fall for that immediately into some kind of training that allows them to gather a little bit more understanding and knowledge, maybe increase their paranoia levels. So the next time that campaign is ran, less emails, less victims fall for it. So we still see probably an increase needed on the training and education side around phishing. This report here is showing the various attack vectors that we do see today. And then, like I said, phishing's on there, and that's been extremely effective for entities entering the organization. of course, if someone gets in through a phishing attack, there's still the type of endpoint detection and response tools that you can deploy on your workstations to try to help isolate or quarantine attacks that happen like that. But when we look back through some of the highest impact attacks, phishing has been continuously the source. Now, what was kind of interesting is a higher percent of these attacks by this report were coming in from credentials being stolen. And that may still be from initiated by a phishing attack. And I'll talk about that for a moment. So a lot of what we see are credentials being stolen from a different third-party site. And going back to what I was mentioning earlier, healthcare is a high target here, right? So if your staff are using their work emails to log into LinkedIn, to shopping sites, to dating sites, to anything like that, and using passwords that resemble in any way the password they use at work for your network, for your EHR, et cetera, those, we're seeing a very targeted effort to find healthcare-related domains, find the password that was compromised or stolen associated with that, and then to see if those can be used to get into a healthcare environment. So we've seen and we've worked with entities that have had their executives' emails accounts compromised. And part of that came, from those passwords being available on other sites that the executives were using. And they, even if they're work-related, education around this, of course, would be focused on using a very different password at work than for your network, for your EHR, than you use for any other site. And then also, as often as possible, not using your work domain, your work email out there. So those are things that we'd really want to keep in mind, because that phishing had been at the top, and having stolen compromised credentials become this large source just reminds us all to get good training on password hygiene and how to protect your account. There's a couple reports that perhaps your IT vendor can run. There's reports we run for our customers, things, ways to get to it, but they will look for commonly used passwords. One of the ways that this is being taken advantage of is there's preset lists of all these common passwords, right, that you run as a hacker. You're going to run a script and use that list of passwords against the user accounts to see if anybody's using a commonly used password effectively. And so we run scans to see if any of your user accounts are using these passwords that are already existing in a list. That's going to be probably the first step of a hacker's efforts to get into your network. The other thing especially in the stolen credentials, would say, we mentioned multi-factor authentication as a great mitigating factor here. So while this is a large risk, we say, what can we do to reduce our risk in this area? Or training our employees, we also need some level of multi-factor authentication. So if that has been set up for your email, that's great. Should also be for any remote access into the network and any remote access into cloud-based systems that you're using, et cetera. So that's something that, again, reduces the risk when we're talking about where our risk is there. It doesn't take it out completely, of course, but it's an offset to the type of threats that we're seeing right now in this world. So those are a couple areas that have probably been the most concerning to us, especially the fact that it's still increasing, even though we've kind of had this picture and this data for a while. It's just stepping up a bit. And I'll comment on one more aspect of this that we're also seeing on the credentials side, and this really blends into security and privacy, is we have IT departments that are sophisticated and really aware of their account management. So when someone leaves the organization, they know exactly what to shut off in the Active Directory, so your primary account, in your electronic health record, and other systems that the IT department is managing. Fairly consistently, many of those employees might have access, or some of them may have access to other systems as part of their ability to accomplish their work day to day. So those might be clearinghouses, might be HIEs, might be lab systems. There's a number of third-party sites that our staff might need access to. And those are off the radar of the IT department. So when the employee departs, even if you have a really strong, consistent termination process, those accounts could get missed and those employees could still log in later. And sometimes that's just, it's even well-intended. They're logging in to help with their new job and say, oh yeah, I have access to the state's health information exchange. I can log in and help with that. But we've also seen some pretty dramatic negative effects for an organization where they ended up with press around this and financial impact from having an employee retain access that they shouldn't have when they left the organization. So just wanted to highlight a couple of those things that we're seeing around these type of attack vectors and sources of data breaches that we're seeing there as well.
No, that's great information to hear, Joe. And then on the other side of the coin, we've got our top internal threats. And what those internal threats look like can really be broken down into three pillars: curiosity, caring, or snooping. So those are the three things that usually get physicians and ultimately the organization into trouble. And some examples of these include looking at family members' records. Maybe they're curious to see if some recent test results came in for their child or a parent that they care for. There's coworker snooping, such as checking in to see if that coworker really was sick that day they called out and needed coverage. Or maybe a nurse has a close friend with a recent accident and they want to check in on their record and see how things are going with their care. And then a biggie that we see a lot is maybe they heard there was a movie star or a local politician that came in and they just want to see why. There's a vast array of insider threats, and I think it's important to be aware and prepared for when these situations do happen. And although I won't go into detail, some other common threats we've seen are patient portals providing patients with an immense amount of data that, if incorrect, can be screenshot and reported. There's incorrect proxies, again, sharing information it shouldn't, billing issues, or simply a mistake that your IT team made. And the good news is organizations are getting better at closing these gaps. And then with the right technology, this can be spotted and corrected rather quickly. Another question is, why do people feel like they can snoop? And I like to say this is partly because we are in an age of instant gratification. Information is always at our fingertips, just a search away. We want to know it all, and we want to know it all right now. And this can be a dangerous habit when it involves having easy access to protected health information. To exacerbate this, there are also now so many hands in the pot. Gone are the days with paper records stored away in locked rooms. Now users are clicks away from the PHI they are so curious to see. This information can sometimes even be accessed both internally and externally as well. So across multiple hospitals, physician clinics, hospice centers, urgent care centers, and maybe even more if it's a large enough healthcare organization. Other common reasons users snoop is maybe they aren't educated on what is considered snooping, or they think they can get away with it. In both cases, the answer is kind of the same: having a way to identify who these people are and how to help correct this behavior. So then we kind of go into what are the best practices to do this. Well, for one, make sure you're working with the right technology and partners. Having something such as a patient privacy monitoring solution in place can save you time and money in the long run. Why waste time digging through every access in the canned reports you get within your EHR when you can have a system that sniffs out inappropriate behavior for you and even incorporates AI and automation? Another best practice is using that information to uncover the gaps in your organization and identify any problem areas. By doing this, you can begin a corrective action plan to include more tailored education and maybe even improve your workflows. You can identify which departments or facilities are producing the most incidents. You can target those areas first for further education. Using these tools, you can visualize what types of inappropriate accesses are most prevalent in your organization, which can help you identify what topics your staff needs to be better educated on. You can also improve workflows by tracking incidents that are reportable to patients or even to the Office of Civil Rights within these tools. We all know there is only so much time in a day, and privacy officers need to prioritize what is important. So automating mundane tasks could be the recipe for success in this sense. So imagine having an email sent out to users automatically after they access their own record, warning them that it's against policy and even providing them with the policies to review. This type of access alone being automated can save privacy teams hours of work each month. So that's time that could be better spent on educating your staff and optimizing your workflows. And I know that's a lot of information, but it can really be broken down into three parts. It's about uncovering where your actual issues are, whether that's with software, audits, reports, and then using that information to come up with a plan, whether that's more tailored education or more effective corrective actions or even better workflows. And then finally, using AI and automation to not only make those first two points more effective, but also to help you free up your time so you can put these into effect. Another thing everyone needs to keep their eye on is regulatory changes. So before we get into the details of this, I wanted to share a recent story. A dental practice in California was hit with a $23,000 fine and a corrective action plan a few years ago when a complaint was submitted to the OCR. The complainant had said the practice made a habit of responding to criticism on Yelp by posting the real names of Yelpers that used monikers to leave their reviews, as well as detailed information about their patient visits and their insurance. And in this way, all of the insider threats I've kind of been talking about have spread to a place we once didn't really worry about or maybe even consider, which is social media.
The other interesting area we've seen a spike in is the right of access topic. And this has been both a focus of the Office of Civil Rights, which has really driven some increased visibility to it, but also the OCR has made it very easy for patients to find, and you can check this out. If you Google, can't get my patient record, or how do I get my record? The OCR has a complaint portal that is very accessible. And as a result, they've fielded a lot of response or a lot of complaints, a lot of concern from patients that are not receiving their records within a timely manner. That's usually the case. There's some other aspects of this, but the majority of the penalties that were handed out in the past couple of years and the types of investigations we've seen have been around a patient saying, I can't get to my record. And, you know, we've seen even someone who doesn't have a right to that record start a complaint because they were asking for it for their boyfriend or their girlfriend or something like that. And they'll complain to the OCR and an investigation is opened, and it becomes about getting that documentation to show why you didn't honor the request and also having the policies and procedures in around this.
Yeah, and with right of access, on top of all that, response time is going to be cut in half from 30 days to 15. I work with a lot of privacy teams, and I know time isn't something teams have much of these days. So when response time is cut in half like that, and that extra demand is put on their staff, teams are going to have to find some kind of way to make that up.
Yeah, it's not going to necessarily get easier here. Taking a hard look at your internal workflows and your processes around this would be really timely. We've also wanted to point out that the Office of Civil Rights in the past couple of years has been somewhat limited in their investigation resources, their ability to follow up on all these complaints. They've been pretty active, but they did get a budget increase of roughly 60%. They're hiring many more employees, about 90 new employees focused on enforcement. So these areas where the aspects we're talking about, it's not necessarily new things for healthcare entities, but just really important to ensure you're in compliance with the regulatory requirements under both the privacy and security rule, because enforcement probably isn't backing off, and there's a few more ways you could end up in the spotlight here. So wanted to underline that with you. More on the, maybe on the positive side here, the safe harbor new legislation that happened, or actually it's been a couple of years, it was in 2021, but last year the OCR asked for public comments on this, and they've already started implementing part of it. So if you haven't heard of safe harbor, specific to data breach or OCR enforcement, if you have as a healthcare entity a 12-month history of implementing, in their words, some recognized cybersecurity framework, and there's a few examples that were mentioned by the OCR, then they will somewhere between eliminate or at least reduce the investigation time and the potential penalty for an event that occurs. So if you have a cybersecurity attack or some other technical breach that occurs, being able to demonstrate that you've been compliant with, say, the NIST cybersecurity framework, or there's a couple other healthcare specific frameworks just in the past week that have been, the Health and Human Services has been putting out guidelines around that type of framework implementation will go a long way to reducing or eliminating the after effects of an event that occurs. And as we've talked about frequently, we're employing humans. We have some pretty advanced adversaries coming at us. As much as we put all these right controls that we talk about in place, the chance of a breach is still quite possible, and the risk never goes to zero. So this gives you a proactive thing you can do that reduces your risk, at least of any, hopefully a risk of a breach, but not also the downstream impact that can happen. Within MedCurity, we tie every aspect of the security risk analysis to the NIST standard that matches that, just to kind of give that roadmap and show. So if you needed to, you can demonstrate that you're working with two guidelines as well. And then finally on telehealth, the big news there is just that the public health emergency is ending. So if there were in your organization ways that you may have backed off or spent less time or attention on compliance or setting your telehealth partner up as a business associate, those things need to be certainly in place here in the next couple months. The grace around that is fading there.
Yeah, and a little more on telehealth. As we saw earlier in the graph I had up, insider breaches spiked around COVID, and telehealth and remote work became more common. So it's important when that happens to keep the same level of accountability as if the provider was in the office. With no one looking over their shoulder, providers are much more likely to snoop. So there's definitely ways to better keep track of who is accessing those records and where they are going to make sure if there are any issues, they are uncovered and corrected in a timely manner.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a good point as to how a security risk assessment as an organization needs to evolve as well, because you're looking at the new ways or different ways that you might as an entity be providing care in the past couple of years. And some of it was maybe just temporary, putting out if you had some field work occurring or employees working from home that have now been brought back. But as you do, hopefully your annual security risk analysis, if you're using the same exact guidelines and set of questions and thought processes as 4 or 5 years ago, it should be revisited, right? And say, what in our environment has changed? Have we taken the OCR focus on right of access and applied it to ourselves to make sure that we're really on top of our workflows and have a good solid set of policies around this? Have we looked at telehealth and how we're delivering care and in that way, if we are, and the new kind of risk, like as Demi was just describing, there's certainly a bit of risk around this, even if you've signed up with a really well-established telehealth vendor. And then putting that cybersecurity type of framework in place that allows you something you can demonstrate and say, look, we were working on this or toward this, so we have standards. It's not just, having passwords and having logout times on your computers, but saying this is the best practice for what that logout time should be. This is the best practice for how passwords are managed. This is the best practice for how we do encryption with our, with email and data in transit and with any kind of data that sits on our laptops or servers, et cetera. So just ensuring that as you go through that regular process to look at your risks that you're taking a hard look to say what's shifted both for our organization in the past year and what's shifted in the threat landscape and these type of things we've been talking through today.
Well, those are great points, Joe.
So I'll wrapping up here, just a few words on MedCurity. I mentioned a couple times the platform, the software platform is focused as a foundation on the security risk analysis. So you can do that in spreadsheets. There's a couple tools that are available. We built this just to try to improve in this area and give our customers a place to not only capture a complete security risk analysis, your audit ready, so you can show that in case of an OCR investigation that's triggered by whatever, or a data breach that occurs, et cetera. So you want to capture that. You want to have a really clear picture on where any gaps are, where your risks are, and then begin working on that through the year. So instead of just a full report, the MedCurity platform gives you risk management. You have action items that you can track or watch through the year, and there's analytics that show how you're doing in reducing those risks. And you can have multiple users on there that are managing that. So our focus is on building out a platform. And then if there are policy gaps, policies and procedures you don't have yet, there's a library. You can answer some questions. It creates a policy specific to your organization. We also have ability to track the agreements with your business associates. So you get alerts if there's time, if you need to refresh them. You have one place to go for an inventory. Again, that's really key. Our vendors are at risk too. And where the liability and the accountability comes in is going to be on the vendor. If you have a signed business associate agreement, it's going to be on you if you don't. And there's obviously some grade of that, but almost across the board in the penalties that we've seen, they're going to the business associate. If there's a BAA in place, they're going to the covered entity if there was not. So really important to track those some way or another and ensure you've got a BAA in place with everyone. And then on the training portion, we've got training available across the aspects that are detailed on the slide. And then we're, as I mentioned, in the field, we conduct security risk analysis for customers around the country and just help have them take a third party look at what's going on in their organization and capture all that documentation and hopefully improve year over year and be in a good, have a good defensive posture in light of everything going on.
So for the insider perspective, Iatrix Systems has Haystack IS to help organizations manage those insider threats we've been talking about today. So at its core, Haystack uses AI and automation to not only uncover and almost prevent potential breaches, but it does so without bogging your team down with false positives or letting potentially harmful false negatives slip through the cracks, which is something that I think is overlooked a lot when looking at monitoring software. But we even took it a step further with providing robust reporting that can be used for anything from OCR audits to building better privacy and training plans. And of course, we support you every step of the way. So not only with hundreds of integrations, but also user groups, so you can learn best practices from your peers, software training for new users, and a dedicated customer success specialist like myself to make sure you're set up to succeed. And even if you find yourself not ready to begin monitoring on your own, we offer managed services so you can get up and running right away.
I just wanted to say thanks, Joe and Demi, and thank you everybody for joining our webinar today.